The Athletic.
Truly Football Show today. Felix the Catalan. PSG sends on a Donna rumour when hamburgers collide. And, pardon me boys, is that the Çalhanoğlu choo-choo? We look back at Napoli Inter. All that and more in this Totally Football Show. Totally Football Show European Edition on Tuesday, December the 5th. Correct, Rafa?
Correct.
Hooray! Excellent. Rafa's here with us, as is Julien Laurent.
Hello.
And Alvaro Romeo.
Hola.
And James Horncastle.
Hello.
Everyone very excited about the Euro 2024 draw, yes?
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Who's most excited?
Well, I'm not anymore.
Oh.
Why?
Well, I mean, the games are great, but like Italy's like have two games, which are in Dortmund and Gelsenkirchen, which means I'm going to be based around there. And Raf, like, it doesn't look like the most exciting part of Germany.
Oh, that's true.
I'd rather be in Berlin or Munich.
Where's the third game?
Third game is in Leipzig.
I see.
Bad luck for you.
Do you know what Italy's base camp would be? Maybe that would be something completely different.
They're still negotiating, but I think it's on the outskirts of... It's between Dortmund and Düsseldorf.
Yeah, base yourself in Düsseldorf. It's a nice city.
Any good restaurants there, Rafa?
There's some really good restaurants in Düsseldorf.
Oh, really?
It's got a massive Japanese population.
Ooh. Oh.
Yeah, it's famous for its Japanese restaurants.
Nice. Oh.
The French would be... Their base is in Paderborn. That's not good news, is it?
I kind of knew it.
The vibes here are like Germany, not a great host country.
What about Spain? Where is Spain going to be?
I heard,
not sure.
I heard about Spain.
Or the country?
Yes. It's in Western Europe. I forget, but I heard that they got this very cool place with their own.
Right. A lot of podcast listeners would have concerned themselves with which teams are drawn whom. But we're more. What's it going to be like for any journalist following
us? Yes. I mean, priorities.
Of course.
Yeah, Düsseldorf.
Okay.
James.
All right.
I mean, the French play in Düsseldorf the first game against the Dutch. So,
do that game instead.
No, against Austria is the first game.
Against Austria, the first game in Düsseldorf.
What a group, Jules. Is that the real group of death, do you think? You've got France and Netherlands and Austria, who Rafa knows so well. And then whoever makes it out of the playoff could be Wales, could be Ukraine.
Could be Wales or Poland.
Yeah, it could be Wales, could not be Poland. Yeah, it's
good. Could be Finland.
Could also be Finland.
Or Estonia, if you want to.
Okay. Anyone else?
Mrs. L is very excited if Wales make it and play against France.
Because Mrs. L is Welsh.
Mrs. L is Welsh. So I think there's a big contingent coming over from friends and families in case Wales qualify and play against France, which would be good. It's good. I mean, we play the Australian in the Nations League, of course.
The Australians.
The Austrians.
Yeah, not the Australians.
No, it's the Australians, surely.
No, he the Australians.
Australians.
But you know that Raúl Albiol, you remember Raúl Albiol?
Yeah,
he played for Villarreal.
Yeah.
In Euro 2008, he was in Austria. And they asked him, when do you think that you'll be back in Austria? And he said, the next time I'll go to Austria, I'll come back.
With
to see the kangaroos.
Nice.
Nice. Raul.
This is literally Raul Albiol in 2008.
Wow. Perfect.
Yeah.
Kangaroo schnitzel.
Yeah.
Something.
Yeah.
Okay.
Very tasty.
Interesting.
And we play the Dutch, obviously,
and the
regularly. I think this is the...
Jules' nemesis, of course. He thinks all Dutch managers, he will not name them.
The Dutch guys, basically.
The Dutch guys.
And then, yeah, hopefully it's Wales and not Poland who we faced at the World Cup. So basically all the teams know each other really, really well. That's what I meant. So, yeah, it should be fun.
Yeah.
It's not as... group of death than the one we had in the last Euros with Germany, with Portugal and with Hungary. Mm. So hopefully the outcome will be better.
Germany group of death or the group of petty moor?
Rafa, I don't know. This time in the morning. Germany will be having Scotland and Hungary and Switzerland as their companions in their group, which seems nice.
Who's the best team in that group?
Hungary. According to recent results,
Italian
league.
Coach, of course.
Nation league.
One of 20% of the coaches at the Euros are Italian.
Oh, okay.
How many?
20%.
20%?
Four.
Four out of 24. That's not 20%.
It's not 20%, is it? I saw the statistic, but yeah. I'm sure there's still time.
You can count
for more.
You can count.
Italy, meanwhile, drew a tough group with Spain, Alvaro, and Croatia and Albania.
Yeah, Spain playing in Berlin, the first game, by the way. So you were asking me about that. Good place to start.
Yes.
Against Croatia. Mm. And it's the only group that puts together the current champion of Euro with the current champion of the Nations League as well. Italy against Spain. So that's going to be good.
So is it the fifth Euros in a row where Spain will face Italy? Or the sixth one even?
Well, no, I mean, it's the third in a row that Spain and Croatia will meet.
But this group...
Spain and Italy even more.
This group is like the group in 2012 when it was Spain, Italy, Croatia and the Republic of Ireland.
And
Italy drew their first two games against Spain, took the lead, Di Natale, took the lead against Croatia, Pirlo, and then they beat the Republic of Ireland in the last game to go through. And of course, so they reached the final.
The final, and then 2016 was the contest game in the last 16. 2020,
magnificent. The kicking the ball.
And 2008, the nil-nil. Exactly, Spain winning in the quarterfinals.
So that's what, 5 euros in a row where they face each other?
Yes, yeah.
Really cool, man. Really cool.
Extraordinary. What do you think, Rafa?
Classic. 5 years in a row? Very cool.
What do you want me to say? It's not my debate.
Spain and Italy. How much attention have you been paying? You managed to retain the last 5 words, so. A bit before that. No way.
No, you're talking about the Spain Italy. It doesn't concern me. What happens in the group stage?
Very well done.
Yeah.
Group stage.
Not important.
Tell you what, Rafa, let's move on to something that you are familiar
with. Do you
want
to talk about a bit of Germany? Just a little bit.
Yeah. Go on then.
I mean, it was, I think, greet it with a sense of relief, the draw, because Germany, as you know, are not in the best of spells at the moment. And any slightly more high-profile group, I think, would have just heaped more doom and gloom on proceedings. The fact that it's Scotland in the opening game and Hungary and Switzerland, I think, have made people slightly more excited and optimistic. Whether that's justified, I'm not sure, because certainly Hungary have been really good. They caused really problems to Germany in the Nations League and also in the Euros 2 years ago. And Switzerland, we also played them in the Nations League, and it wasn't easy either. So, yeah. But
and obviously
we should do it, really.
Germany, last 16, is paired with the England group. So if Germany finished first...
Italy.
If Germany finished first of Group A, then they will play the second of Group C.
But if we finish second,
but if you finish we'll second,
play the second of Italy, Spain,
Italy, basically,
of Group B,
or Croatia,
So even for
not
Germany,
Spain will be first.
You know, the knockout phase could be tricky.
What we haven't done yet is moment of the weekend. So Jules, what do you got?
I've got Sunday afternoon in Lille, where Lucas Chevalier, the Lille goalkeeper, saved two penalties in the same game, which is the second time this season it happened in Ligue 1, because if you remember, Marcin Bulka, the Nice goalkeeper, saved twice a penalty against Flo Balogun in the derby against Monaco. So second time this season where a goalkeeper, and it's like two saves. It's not like someone missed a pen and then he saved the second one. It's two actual saves on penalty in the same game, which I think is pretty amazing.
Brilliant stuff. Alvaro.
My one is the man of the weekend for me, Cristian Estuani, the very veteran striker of Girona, scoring a brace to trigger another remontada for Girona. It's incredible. They are coming back in so many games. They are still hanging there. And they beat Valencia 2-1. And Cristian Estuani, a player who has been in Girona through the thin and thick. I mean, this time he was showing his quality, a little bit becoming the, if you like, the Leo Ulloa of this Girona, because he doesn't... Estuani doesn't play a lot, but he's scoring decisive goals. I don't know if in decisive moments, because it's not April yet, and Leo Ulloa, you know, scored the goals for Leicester to win the league in spring, but definitely he was racing up to the challenge. So Girona have a win, and Estuani was the best man of all the team.
Former Middlesbrough favourite.
Legend,
Legend, even.
Although he missed a big chance, two big chances against Athletic Club de Bilbao the weekend before, so he kind of redeemed himself.
Okay. Nice to know.
Brought to Europe, of course, by Regina.
There you are. Yeah. There you go. James, your moment of the weekend.
Well, I know Jules always takes the mickey on this. And
don't
says
tell
that,
me there's too many. Don't tell me there's
too many. There are actually too many. There are, James.
No, I mean, just pick one. We all have many.
I mean, in terms of moment of the week, so about five goals, which would justify moments of the week alone. But
you're going to go for the Lecce equaliser, probably.
Oh, no, I was going to go for Ngonge.
It's not even on the list.
Or Sotil.
It's not even on the list.
There's even more. Not even on the list. Many now. Yeah.
Sotil for Fiorentina.
Nice goal.
It's probably the best example of a shot kissing the bottom of the bar. Kisses it wonderfully. It's a great. It's magnificent. All but right. my moment of the weekend is Jose Mourinho.
Let's not deny him the oxygen of publicity.
He was on fire the whole week, really.
He was a colossal.
From after the Servette game.
Even by his own standards, he was reprehensible.
But I mean, did you see the interview he gave?
Yeah, I mean, I've seen the quotes.
The quote, but you have to watch the actual video. It's amazing. So, listeners, what happened is on Friday or Saturday, pre-match press conference, Jose Mourinho calls the referee emotionally unstable, not great. The Italian Football Federation says or briefs that it's going to launch an investigation. He then obviously takes charge of the game against Sassuolo. Roma win, and the DAZN reporter asks him a question about the win afterwards, and Jose just launches into a five-minute answer in Portuguese.
Não, é a vitória dos jogadores, é a vitória dos romanistas que invadiram este estádio.
He felt he was misinterpreted the day before, and obviously his Italian is not polished enough. So he did the whole interview in Portuguese without any warning, without telling the DAZN reporter that he was going to do it in Portuguese.
And no one stopped him. Midway through the answer.
No. So it was.
He said that the referee didn't have the emotional stability to take charge of the game. Roma, it has to be said, owed the win to a fairly soft penalty. So, yeah, but Jose gonna Jose. Rafa, moment of the weekend.
I'm torn between two, really.
Really? Say them both.
Do you want
not?
Like the more positive one or the more sort of...
The positive moment of the weekend, usually. Yeah,
okay, well, it is, of course, Germany beating France again in the big final of the under-17s.
Die ganz großen Clubs sind dran an Almugera Cava. Und er schießt Deutschland zum Titel!
Almugera Cava with a penalty that decided it.
Yep.
And the second time on penalties.
How many Paris-born and bred players are in this loser team?
Only
that
one
the
from
French,
PSG.
I saw for the semi-final, and there was only one change for the final. It was 6 out of 11, I think, if I remember. Yeah,
maybe that's why they lost.
The best ones. The
ironically,
best ones.
The one player called Paris... Of course, won it for Germany. Paris Brunner.
What are the odds?
he was just such a good boy that he was suspended on disciplinary reason by Dortmund.
I mean, look, we all did some stuff when we were 16, 17, didn't we?
Right. But what was the negative one?
Oh, the own goal from Daniel Hoyer Fernandez.
Well, we'll come on to that. Don't you worry.
Heroes and zeros.
Yeah. All right. Let's start, though, seeing as there's so many moments that are worth talking about from there, with Serie A.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
Quite the weekend in Serie A. You had a goalkeeper winning a crucial penalty. You had Cyril Ngonge's brilliant overhead kick for Verona.
You had an assist from a goalkeeper.
Yeah, Magic Mike.
Mike Maignan.
Also.
Kubicic, yeah.
A 62-yard assist, was it?
Yeah, I think his third assist since joining the club, yeah.
Also, down in Naples, you had last year's winners versus probably this year's winners in Napoli-Inter. James, what was this like?
It was a really good game, I felt. Even though Napoli lost 3-0, they didn't play too badly. Inter just showed, you know, what I keep saying about them, that they're sort of pound for pound the best Italian team since Juventus reached two Champions League finals in 2015-2017. And I think it was a complete performance because you saw, for example... Jan Sommer, the goalkeeper, make a huge save on Elmas really early on. He'd have to make another one from Kvaratskhelia. So there's been no drop-off really from Onana since he moved on.
Strangely.
But he was amazing for Inter. At the other end of the pitch, Thuram, again, scores. He's just been... Yeah, I mean, you think of Inter's chief executive, Beppe Marotta, or the free transfers that he's done over the years. Pogba, Pirlo... Khedira could go on. I think Thuram is up there with the very best of them. And then in midfield, the midfield is just, you know, people look at it and say, oh, it's a bit old. with Mkhitaryan, Çalhanoğlu and Barella. But Çalhanoğlu's been reinvented, playing in front of the defence, scored a great goal to open the scoring.
Beautiful goal.
Which, you know, Napoli said should have been ruled out because Lautaro Martinez rugby tackles Lobotka in the build-up. But lovely goal. And then Barella kind of involved in everything as well. So
and himself scoring. So scored. Very nice.
Lovely goal.
His slaloming through.
Yeah. Mm. So, and to be honest, I mean, there was a lot riding on this game because Inter have had a... they played five of the last six games away from home. The last week, they obviously played in Turin against Juventus in the Derby d'Italia. They went behind in that game, came back. They were 3-0 down at halftime against Benfica, came back, could have won that game. Didn't really matter because they'd already qualified. And then to go to Naples against the champions of Italy, who had shown signs that they were improving in two games under Mazzarri, I think it was quite a statement from Inter.
Yeah, indeed. They picked up the biggest victory there since 1977.
I thought that was so impressive. Really impressive.
And Inter could go all the way, as we know, in Champions League.
There you go.
But I have a question on Çalhanoğlu for you. Mm. Is that the first time that Inter got the better deal from swapping players with Milan?
I think it probably is. The first time in a long time that they did, no? Because you're looking at Pirlo going to Milan, yeah. Seedorf going to Milan. And at the time, yeah, I think Milan felt, you go and pay this guy the money that he wants because we don't think he's worth it. You know, he's only good on set pieces.
Yeah, he was inconsistent.
Good at free kicks, good at corner kicks, but doesn't really make the difference otherwise. And instead, every time Çalhanoğlu now plays against his old club, he usually scores a penalty or does something. He's never played in Turkey, aside from with his national team, but you can tell he's got that kind of... He's unfazed by really hostile atmospheres or just hostility in general. And certainly, I mean, this time last year, he was being asked to play this role in front of the defence because Brozovic was out. And he wasn't entirely convincing. Inter weren't entirely convincing this time last year in the league. You know, remember, Inzaghi was on the brink of being sacked for the first of three occasions in that season. But now he seems to have completely mastered that role. Hmm. So I would say yes, Raf. I think that's probably a good shout.
Good shout, Raf. Inter last weekend with the 1-1 draw away at Juventus. That'll be the fixture that awaits Napoli. Mm. And a tough run of games that Walter Mazzarri begins with after Real Madrid in the Champions League last week. Inter this weekend and Juve away next weekend. Juve, who are 2 points behind Inter, getting the victory this weekend, but only just. Woof, right at the death. Monza, they were leading. Actually, Juve were leading 1-0 after 90 minutes. But then Monza grab a goal in the 92nd, I think it was.
Yeah.
From Valentin Carboni, but then
dal settore di destra, attenzione, palla in aria, Gatti, il gol della Juventus con Gatti, clamoroso. Gatti aveva ricevuto l'invito dalla destra.
Federico Gatti scores, their centre back.
After he fluffed the first shot that he tries, after that he should not be allowed to score again. I mean, this is embarrassing.
But Gatti keeps showing up with these big goals. Remember, I think in Juventus' only defeat of the season, he was culpable for that shocking own goal. But you know, I mean, this is quite a story from Gatti. I mean, yeah, this guy is like a bricklayer from Piedmont who'd it was playing in the lower divisions until 18 months ago with Frosinone, and you know, Juventus claimed to see a new Chiellini in him. I don't think he's of that level, but to score that goal and to win in stoppage time after conceding an equaliser in stoppage time, kind of, again, it's one of those moments where you're like, that's the stuff of champions, really. And Inter had to really respond to it, and they did. But Juventus are going nowhere, even though, you know, they have Dusan Vlahovic who keeps, you know, who missed a penalty. And they never look particularly convincing. But I think people are underestimating like the job that Allegri's doing, because at the start of the season, like if you look at the back three, it's completely changed. You know, it was Danilo who was essentially the captain, who's been out for like the last 6 weeks. Alexandro, who no one's seen for a few weeks as well.
And the fullbacks as well, really. They're not. Yeah. Alexandro's certainly not like a centre back.
Rugani, who Allegri always defends because he's been at the club for like 8 or 9 years, he's had to come in and he's been really good next to Bremer. And then there's Gatti. Yeah. You've got Pogba suspended, Fagioli suspended, Rabiot, who was amazing in this game.
So good.
Partly because he clashed with Gagliardini.
Inter, to be fair.
And up front, people rave about Chiesa, but what does Chiesa do when he's not playing for his national team? Not all that much, you know what I mean?
Not
so
that much.
Vlahovic misses penalty. So they don't have a striker scoring lots of goals. Kane's not doing it because Kane's busy releasing new singles. I don't know if you've had the chance to listen to Outfit, his new track, which dropped yesterday.
Outfit,
yeah.
Let's have a listen. KMB guarda il mio outfit, 3-0 solo per gli Amiri jeans, MV sperro contanti, e nova la chain guarda quante clean. It's good to see some trap back at Juventus. Yeah. Anyway, that's fantastic. I don't want to let this Serie A chat go by without talking about Lecce Bologna. Bologna have been on that terrific run of form, challenging for the Champions League places.
Yeah.
And they were heading towards another win away at Lecce when, in the 95th minute, Lecce sent their keeper up, which we know Italian sides love to do, and he went and won a penalty.
Yeah, I mean, he didn't score like Alberto Brignoli did for Benevento against Milan, or more recently, Provedel did. Child star. Vladimir Falcone, remember he was in a Carlo Verdone film as a baby.
Mm.
Carlo Verdone, very much the Roman.
Mm.
What's the equivalent here, James? Is there equivalent?
Not sure that there is.
No, just a star of Roman films, comedies. Yeah, he's just the quintessential Roman when you're not thinking of Francesco Totti.
Or Sordi or something.
Incidentally, I did watch the documentary that Totti's wife, ex-wife, put out on Netflix. Stunning. But anyway, back to Lecce Bologna.
He loves that. The Kardashians, Totti's ex-wife. He loves that.
We have to talk about that, by the way. But, yeah, he wins the penalty.
Mm.
And Bobby Little Man, Roberto Piccoli, scores. Equalizes. So there you go. Yeah.
Very nice. Very nice. Anything more from Serie A, or should we get on? Because there's big stories elsewhere.
I mean, there's Paolo Maldini lighting a match and sort of torching AC Milan. I'm not lying when there's too much to talk about. Right. And obviously, there's Unica.
Have you got a column on The Athletic where people can read more?
Yeah, probably.
All right.
Probably. I haven't done my review of the Ilari Blasi documentary, though.
Okay. We'll do that later on.
Okay.
Remind us.
Yeah.
Yeah. Next up, Jules, Ligue 1.
Oh, good.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Before you get back to this Athletic podcast, did you know it's just one of many made by The Athletic every week? I'm Abby Patterson, senior producer here at The Athletic, and I get to work across so many of our shows. But even I have my favourites. Sometimes you're just too busy for a full-length podcast. I get it. We've all been there. Well, we've got a show to help you. Get up to speed with all the football stories you need to know about with our daily football briefing.
It's done and dusted. Saudi Arabia will host the 2034 World Cup.
Got a bug for the women's game? Then Full-Time Europe is for you. It's our dedicated women's football podcast answering the questions you're asking from the WSL and Champions League.
So what's going wrong at Arsenal?
But perhaps you want to know exactly how a team has set itself up. Then come to the audio whiteboard and join Michael Cox and our analytics gurus as they dissect and examine the game like nobody else can. That's on the Athletic Football Tactics podcast.
I don't think I've ever seen a striker who reads the game so well.
Just search The Athletic wherever you're listening to this podcast now, and you'll find your next podcast obsession in no time at all. Now, let's get back to your show.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. The Athletic is the only place you can read articles by Daniel Taylor, Amy Lawrence, Phil Hay, James Pearce, Ollie Kay, and the very best football writers around.
Jules, terrible scenes this weekend before Nantes-Nice with a Nantes fan dying of a knife wound.
Yeah, stabbed to death an hour before kickoff. It's a strange story, really. Basically, some Nice ultras who travelled to Nantes, and it's quite a long way if you think about it. We're supposed to be within the away team kind of group or part, like towards the stand. But they got to the stadium in Ubers, basically. Six of them, six cars, so like all following each other kind of thing. And
it's
arrived.
Liga sponsored by Uber.
Uber Eats. Yeah, Uber still Eats. Similar. Yeah. I'm not sure if they were Ubers, but they were like, you know, those
minicabs.
Minicabs, exactly. Mm. So they arrived in those minicabs or Ubers on the wrong side, basically, of the stadium, near a bar where the Nantes Ultras from La Brigade Loire are always there before home matches. And when those Nantes fans spotted the Nice fans in those cars, they stand 200 of them like surrounding the cars and standing like banging on the cars, trying to get the Nice Ultras out of the car for a fight. And two of the Uber drivers reacted, got out of their car, one with a knife, stabbed the young Nantes Ultra twice in the back, killing him. The other one was like punching people out, and then they fled, obviously, before the police found them. So it's a really, really sad story. And we go back to a debate that we've had many times before. What do you do in France to stop those violence? Like we saw the Lyon coach being obviously attacked by the Marseille fans a few weeks ago, all of that. And it seems like the government and the league will just purely ban away fans to travel to games, which I think would be a real shame because that's part of football. But if you can't ensure the security of those away fans, then why would they be allowed to travel?
So you think there's going to be a blanket ban coming in soon for all travelling fans?
Yeah, probably. That's certainly where I think the sports minister, Amélie Oudéa-Castéra, that's what she wants. I don't know how the league will respond to that. Every single game, not just in my league, but in every league, is ranked for risk. Mm. So from 0 to 5. So 0 is mean there's no risk. The fans are friends. Anybody can go, there will be no problem. Obviously, 5 out of 5 is like super ultra risky. They hate each other. The ultras are going to fight, blah, blah, blah. This was 2 out of 5. Cool. So clearly, there was a bit of baggage before between the non-ultras and the Nice ultras, but not that bad. So really, this should not have been a game with problems. And even if a 2 out of 5 brings you a death and brings you a problem, they just believe that you can't allow anybody to travel anymore, which is the case already in the top games. So Lyon, for example, the fans were allowed to travel for the first time in 10 years, I think, but no PSG fans in Marseille, no Marseille fans in Paris, that kind of stuff. But yeah, they're thinking about doing it for everyone.
Well, earlier this season, we saw Lyon fans allowed to go to Marseille for the first time in a long time, and the game ended up suspended because of that attack on
bus. Postponed, yeah.
That's actually going to be replayed this midweek.
On Wednesday. Yeah.
On Wednesday. Right, yeah. But without Fabio Grosso, ended up with what, 13 stitches?
Yeah, he almost lost an eye.
He almost lost an eye. He's now lost his job.
He lost his job as well. And he lost a lot of games. Indeed, for Fabio Grosso, it was just not working out for him. Uh-huh. 7 games. Even some of the Lyon players were surprised that he actually lasted that long. Hmm. 7. And I don't know where it went wrong. Maybe he was just not ready. Maybe it was too early. I do think that as good as
The club's a mess.
Yeah, and I think he should not have taken it. They offered it to him. He could have easily said, actually, I'm not really sure this is right for me at this time or that the club is in the right position. He went for it. It was brave, I think, because it was going to always be very difficult. So Pierre Sage, you know, or as the, obviously, Lyon fans have renamed him, Stonewise, as Pierre Sage, is in charge as an interim coach.
Stone Wise.
Yes, Stone Pierre. Okay. Wise Sage.
Sage.
Pierre means a stone.
Pierre, yeah, as in you throw a pierre.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then Sage is like your wise.
Yes, yes, Sage.
Yeah. So sage. Pierre Sage was
a sage, yes, James.
No, sage.
Yes, yeah, sage. Who was at the academy, who before that had been like an assistant, and he's quite a smart guy.
Okay.
To be fair, they lost at Lens on Saturday.
3-2. Both Lyon goals from that man, Jake O'Brien.
Jake O'Brien, a Crystal Palace legend, of course. Although I don't think he ever played for them, but certainly was at the club as a youth player from Cork and then went on loan.
Is that because there's an ownership link there?
Indeed, because before he was at Molenbeek in Belgium, also owned by John Textor. And he's their top goal scorer with 3 goals in the league. I think that says a lot.
The new Benzema. The
new Karim the Dream. Jake the Dream, if you want. But to be fair, they played much better against Lens than anything we've seen this season before. Okay. So there's maybe something with Stonewise that, you know, can start, although they think about Sampaoli, They think about Pep Genesio coming back to the club. So they've got a few other options, but I think for now they will give Stone-Wise a bit of a chance, I think. Certainly okay. He will be there on the bench on Wednesday.
All right.
Stone-Wise sounds like a kind of 90s grunge band. Yeah.
I mean,
Yeah.
That can work. Maybe. Marseille, who will be hosting Lyon this midweek, were victorious at home to Rennes.
Very good.
Aubameyang redemption story continues, Jules.
Yes,
yeah, after Thursday.
Yeah, you saw him on Thursday with Raf.
Wonderful overhead kick.
Yeah, against Ajax, really good. And then he scored again, the penalty, and we had a lovely goal from Unai. As in Unai, who had been terrible the whole game and then popped out, scores a wonderful goal to double the lead for Marseille. Rennes were down to 10 men. Again, they keep getting those yellow, those red cards.
So many red cards, Jules, in Ligue 1 this weekend. I've just opened up the page. Two in Marseille Rennes, as you were saying. One in Lens Lyon. One in PSG Le Havre. We've got to get to that one. That's mad. And then Montpellier Monaco. What the hell? Just violent on the pitch, violent off the pitch.
Loads of things.
Madness.
Still not as bad as in other leagues, but you know.
Fight Club. Liga, Fight Club. Not the Ligue d'Italiens.
Fight Club. And Nice lost for the first time.
Well, yes, indeed, because Paris Saint-Germain now 4 points clear at the top. We mentioned Nantes-Nice before, the tragedy before the game. Nice went on to lose for the first time this season there. Yeah. Paris Saint-Germain, their match away at Louvre, saw them lose Gigi Donnarumma after 10 minutes. After he went in with a karate kick on.
Yeah, brain freeze completely.
Oh là là là, attention!
Et ça va être rouge!
Ouais, rouge pour Donnarumma!
Ça va être rouge!
Oh là là!
Alors là! La sortie incroyable!
On Josué Casimir.
Yeah, Casimir, that's right. I mean, I don't really know what went through his head.
He almost went through Casimir.
He was clearly aiming at Casimir's head.
Yeah.
After 10 minutes, and you think, okay, Arnaud Tenas, who's the goalkeeper who came from Barcelona, who was Enrique New, who's a backup or number three, even there. And we're like, what is he going to do? But he was great. He was amazing. He made some big saves.
Was he so good that people are now saying, do we really want Gigi Donnarumma when he comes back from suspension?
So for now, Luis Enrique seems to say after the game, Gigi is okay. He would. You know, start again when
he's
he plays.
He's not been great recently.
He hasn't been great. There's the mistake, the fumble against Newcastle, obviously that cost a lot. Against
which one? The one this time or the one last time?
Well, yeah, both. Mm. But this one, especially the one last time, especially. Mm. There was the one against Monaco that didn't cost them in the end because they won the game, but still. And also, Tenas is much better with his distribution than Donnarumma, who clearly only uses his feet to get on the coach and down. Nothing
and
else.
Aiming for other people's heads.
And they're for Casimir's head. So... Mm. It would be interesting to follow. He will have another game, at least. We don't know yet exactly how long the suspension will be for Donnarumma. So I think it'd be very interesting to see because I certainly liked what I saw. And then he was a PSG defended well. Vitinha scored late. Kylian scored early. There was not much really into it. But Loav played well. And for promoted sides, I just like what Luca Elsner is doing there.
Okay. Kylian Mbappe with his 15th goal in the 14 league matches so far. The last player, Jules, to score that many at this stage of a Ligue 1 season was?
Kylian Mbappe?
No.
Ibra?
No. Hervé Revelli.
Oh, Revelli. Oh, that's a long time ago.
It is.
Yeah, with Saint-Etienne.
Oui, c'est ça. Mm-hmm. Well, there you go, Jules. A pretty dramatic weekend in France. Anything else we should know?
No, I think that's all for me today.
Okay, very good. In the Eredivisie, the top two went at it this Sunday. That's Feyenoord and PSV. PSV, who'd won every single game so far this season in the Netherlands, won this one in Rotterdam as well. 2-1 over Feyenoord, which gives them a slender lead at the top of the Eredivisie. Just the 10 points.
Just the 10 points after 14 games.
For Peter Bosz's side. How do you like that high line?
Yeah, exactly.
Mm. They played 14, won 14. There's only one team that's ever done that before in the Eredivisie. And it was PSV themselves back in 1987, 1988. Hang on, wasn't that the year that they went on to win the treble, including the European Cup? Yes. True. Yes, it was.
We laugh about Peter Bosz's high line, which always gets sort of exposed in the Champions League.
Mm.
But they've conceded only 6 goals in the league this season.
And that's in Holland.
Goal difference of 44, plus 44. Mm. Scored 50.
That's like 2 goals in any other league, isn't it?
That's right. And they, it's like 20% of the Italian match.
The, XG as well was higher than Feyenoord. So it's not like if they went there and it was a robbery and they scored two counter-attacking goals. They actually played really well and basically dominating the game.
So all right. Last week got themselves through to the last 16 of the Champions
League.
Coming
back to Sevilla.
Yeah. Very impressive. Very impressive. Think that maybe...
And they've got Bad De Jong up front. So doing all of that with Bad De Jong, right, is pretty impressive.
The wrong De Jong.
The wrong De Jong.
Okay. Next up, let's talk about La Liga.
Why are so many big stars missing from the Women's Champions League? Do we really need VAR in the women's game? Have Arsenal got too many players? Hello, I'm Sophie Penny, and I'm the host of the all-new Full-Time Europe, The Athletic's women's football podcast. If you're a big women's football fan or a passing purveyor of the game, Full-Time Europe is answering the questions you're asking. From Man United to Lyon, Barcelona to Wolfsburg, we have you covered. That's Full-Time Europe, out every week, available wherever you're listening now.
We're sponsored for this episode of The Totally Football Show by Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform helping you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. It's your perfect teammate, the Sutton to your Shearer, the Heskey to your Owen, the Mane and Firmino to your Salah. Whether you're selling I Belong to Jimbo t-shirts or Max and Barry half and half scars, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, which is up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. Plus, you can sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. And what's more, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 support is there to help your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Now, because you listen to The Totally Football Show, you can sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/totally, all in lowercase. So go to shopify.com/totally to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. That's shopify.com/totally. You're listening to The Totally Football Show with James Richardson, the Football Content Awards International Podcast of the Year.
Big game in Catalonia this weekend. Alvaro, with your friend Xavi notching up another important victory.
So dull. It was so dull.
it was a fantastic game, this one. Poor attendance, by the way.
Oh, yes.
For an Atletico
Barcelona. 35,000, was it?
38,000,
I
think.
Why is that?
A couple of things. The weather wasn't great that day in Barcelona. Oh.
What? In Barcelona?
Yeah, seriously.
The weather is being blamed for bad attendance.
Thing is, if you are used to 20 degrees in winter, okay, and suddenly one day the temperature drops down to 10 and it happens to rain, I think that you will consider that bad weather because you are used to something different.
Thursday night, we had a game, what was it, Helsinki-Aberdeen, which had to be suspended for 15 minutes because the pitch was so covered in snow. It was -5, I think. There were fans there with no shirts on. No shirts. We're
throwing snowballs. It's crazy.
I played in -3 in Ascot on Friday evening myself. Yeah. I mean, yeah, you can do it.
Everyone.
Did you take your shirt off?
I just scored a beautiful goal. We won 4-0 as well. That was nice.
So that was one factor. Are there other factors behind this low attendance?
No, I think that the other factor is the performances of Barcelona haven't been too good, even though beating Porto, I think that was like turning a page for them.
Okay.
Yeah, because for the first time in 2 years, they will be in three years, they will be in the Champions League last 16 round. So I think that this time they played with a lot of ease. I think that the flow of Barcelona was very good. It has to be said that Simeone has never won at Camp Nou in La Liga as Atletico de...
Barcelona, this wasn't at Camp Nou.
Well, yeah, Barcelona ground, yeah, basically. Mm. Even though some of the most painful draws that Barcelona has suffered at home in the last 10 years have been against Atletico de Madrid, one of them in 2014, not to win the league title.
Good in.
That one. And the other one, I think that in the Champions League 2016, when Atletico drew against Barcelona and then went through to the next round. But anyway, I think that Atletico kind of competed, but Barcelona was very good this time. Íñigo Martínez picked an injury at the beginning of the game, but still Xavi could field more or less his preferred lineup with the absence of Gavi that we have spoken about. And Barcelona dominated. They managed to supply a lot to Lewandowski. Lewandowski didn't have a good day. This time, I think that he cannot blame anybody for his performance. But generally speaking, I think Barcelona was good, with a couple of players just standing out. For me, one of them, João Félix, obviously, we'll speak about him now. And the other one, Iñaki Peña. In the same way that PSG has a new goalkeeper right now, Iñaki Peña, in the absence of Ter Stegen, who might have to have surgery in his back, Iñaki Peña did a good game. I'm not too sure about his aerial game, but I think that his reflexes are very good.
Excellent. Well, let's talk about João Félix, because obviously this is a huge game for him against his parent club. Because he's on loan at Barca from Atleti. What a brilliant goal.
Yeah.
I mean, superbly opportunistic chip, no?
Yeah, and on top of that, he's right-footed. So
he
made it even more difficult.
The Oblak could have come out quicker, though. He's still a long touch before the chip.
But
I would blame more Nahuel Molina. Because he was very, 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 very weak in
but
his
still,
challenge.
After that touch, the ball is quite far, and then it takes Oblak forever to come out.
Good goal, anyway, I think. And the celebration was the kind of celebration that Atletico de Madrid fans didn't like.
Yes.
Because at the end of the day, João Félix still belongs to Atletico. But I think that he has burned every bridge with Atletico right now.
Yeah, I was going to ask, what's going to happen at the end of this season?
Look, he got sent on loan to Barcelona, but he extended his contract automatically with Atletico de Madrid until 2029. It was pretty much a double operation in a way. I don't think Simeone wants him there. João Félix has expressed few times that he likes Barcelona, he loves Barcelona, and he likes the way they play, which is clearly an indirect, if you like, message to Simeone. And I don't think that he will come back, but at the same time, the contractual situation of João Félix is difficult because Atletico still believes that this player is valued on 75, 80 million easily, and they would like to get that money for him. And Barcelona is not in the position to spend that money on João Félix, not at all. On the other hand, João Félix is just defending his case, scoring goals. He did against Porto in the Champions League. He was decisive for Barcelona to go through. He hasn't scored a lot in La Liga, but I think that this game was one of those games in which João Félix can feel proud of himself because he did it against Atletico.
Is there a case of it's really only when he wants to? Because I think I looked, the last goal in the league was September 15th or something like that.
Yeah.
So it's been a long time without scoring at all in the league. I mean, and it feels like sometimes you watch him and if he's motivated, then he will have a great game. If he doesn't really fancy it, he's pretty anonymous. And could you spend another 80 million plus his wages on a player that is still a bit inconsistent?
That's the thing, that look, when João Félix started playing for Benfica in his first breakthrough season, he scored 20 goals. And I remember talking to you guys back at the time when we started with the podcast, and I was saying that I think that this guy is already a reality. If you score 20 goals as a 19-year-old player in Benfica, you are not a promise anymore. You are a player who is ready for top football. And he has been at times. When Atletico won the league in 2021, getting 50 points in the first half of the competition, of the tournament, João Félix was phenomenal. One of the reasons why Atletico won La Liga. But then he's very inconsistent as well. He's a player of games. He's not a player of big tournaments and big leagues so far. And he has to improve that. He has to improve that. It's something related to his personality, probably. I don't think that he has the eagerness to come onto the game and score in every single game. His performances have been okay for Barcelona, very good at times, but it's true that in October and early November he wasn't good enough, and he has to work on that. Barcelona knows that, Xavi knows that, even João Félix himself knows that he has to be better on a consistent basis to be considered one of the good players, especially because Atletico is not going to let him go for any less than 75 million.
Right, well, especially after what they paid for him, was what, 120?
120.
Yeah. Okay. 1-0 for Barcelona, just like the scoreline against Porto. Barcelona, in fact, have won the most games by that 1-0 scoreline since the start of last season of all of the clubs in Europe's top five. Wow.
Catalan Natural.
Nice. 1-0 to the Barcelona, you might say.
They are 4 points behind the leaders, Real and Girona, who are level at the top. Who do Barcelona face next weekend, Alvaro?
Girona.
Girona.
Yeah.
Is it Girona, not Girona?
Girona is, in, if you use the Spanish way of saying it,
it's
Girona.
From Catalonia.
In Catalonia, they say Girona, basically.
Nice. Yeah. All right. Well, both Real and Girona won this weekend. Real 2-0 against Granada. Girona, with that aforementioned 2-1 victory over Valencia with a brace from Christian, spelt very badly, Stuani.
Yeah.
Oh, Rodrigo got a goal for the fifth game in a row for Real.
Yeah, because Rodrigo is very good. And because Rodrigo is another streaky striker like João Félix. But I think that in the case of Rodrigo, you can really tell that he's got the potential to be a 25 goals a season footballer.
Ooh.
Really, really, because...
After what you said about João Félix, though, 5 years ago,
yeah,
I'm not inclined
I don't have any credibility here.
Not going to get too excited.
All right, maybe he can be the kind of a striker that sometimes you feel that he doesn't have a clear position on the pitch. We have spoken about that. But since Vinicius is out, he's scoring all these goals.
Mm.
And he's playing really nicely as well. I would say that he's not only a footballer that defines his performances via the goals. If he doesn't score, therefore he doesn't deserve a good rating.
Okay.
He plays really good football. And Jude Bellingham, the new golden boy, by the way, we have to say that... You know, he may have to undergo shoulder injury. I don't know about that yet, but...
Surgery for the dislocated shoulder.
Dislocated shoulder, yeah, but his performances have been phenomenal. And the one against Napoli in the Champions League was one of the best performances of a Real Madrid player in a while. I would say that Carlo Ancelotti, sometimes he gets praised for his man management, and it's true, he's very good on that. But he has created favorable contexts for a few players to sign. I remember... For example, Di Maria in 2014, he became a left midfielder because Real Madrid had to play with the BBC and Di Maria had to abandon the left channel. And Ancelotti made of Di Maria a player that was so good that Manchester United, the season later, was paying a lot of money for him. Same thing with Fede Valverde. In the absence of many midfielders, Fede Valverde is playing now in midfield with Toni Kroos.
Hmm.
And Fede Valverde is playing in the position where he can prove his quality best, because you know, the pitch is immense and Fede Valverde has the freedom to run all over the park, and that is thanks to Carlo Ancelotti. Carlo Ancelotti has decided to deploy Fede Valverde to that position. Jude Bellingham, same thing. At Borussia Dortmund he was phenomenal, he was very good, but it has been at Real Madrid where Jude Bellingham has found these numbers. So I think that Carlo Ancelotti has a lot to do with that. He creates the context for a player to sign.
Okay, excellent. Quick mention for your lot, Alvaro, Athletic, who were up to fifth with a mighty 4-0 thumping this weekend.
We didn't lose at Girona on Monday, and we beat Rayo. Rayo didn't lose against Barcelona, didn't lose against Real Madrid. They come to San Mamés and look what happens. With Nico Williams.
And Iñaki Williams.
And Iñaki Williams, yeah, but I want to single out Nico because he extended his contract.
Oh.
His contract was running in 2024, and he signed 3 more years.
Ooh.
And this guy is quite special, too.
All right.
Iñaki probably scores more goals. He's been more years in the top flight as well. But Nico Williams, we haven't had a dribbler like this that I can remember, really.
It's funny how you had the Williams sisters and you got the Williams
brothers. The Williams brothers. Yeah.
What is it about Williams? And, I wonder.
And all of them are very good.
Yeah.
I mean,
that's
my point.
Yeah.
And there is another player that is the best one we have probably at Bilbao, which is Ollán Sanzet.
Ah.
I mean, probably better than Nico Williams, I would say. Maybe the best academy player we have had since Fran Yeste or Julen Guerrero. I mean, his positioning of the body to receive the ball, to give the passes. He's also capable of organizing the game as well. His connection with Iñaki Williams on the right is paying dividends for Athletic. Look, we're looking good. We're looking good. And we have lost Iñigo Martínez this summer. So the defense is kind of still suffering from that. We lost our best defender. But we're competing and we have scored 30 goals already, which is more than Barcelona. So things are good at Bilbao at the minute. I don't know if with Girona being that good, we're going to be able to qualify for the Champions League. But if there is any manager who can take us there, it's Valverde, because he qualified us for the Champions League 9 years ago already.
There you go. 3 points off the top four right now. Magnificent. Next up, Rafa. Bundesliga.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League One? FX is Welcome to Wrexham. Premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu. This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
So Rafa, huge game in the Bundesliga last weekend. Bayer Leverkusen, top of the table and absolutely flying, hosting Borussia Dortmund. How'd it go?
1-1 draw, James. Their run of 14 wins in a row interrupted. They're still unbeaten, of course, this season, which is pretty good. I think 18 wins, 2 draws for Xabi Alonso. But they should have perhaps won the game.
They were the better team.
Dortmund scored early and then did very little. Riasson with the goal. Leverkusen had problems converting their dominance into chances and into goals. And then Schick came on, Patrick Schick, after his long injury, to provide an assist for Victor Boniface.
Lovely, a very well-worked goal, the equaliser. Yeah.
It was. Nice. And afterwards, lots of controversy about penalty that perhaps should have gone Dortmund's way. Mm. Karim Adeyemi was touched and made sort of a big exaggerated movement. And quite commendably, I think, Daniel Ziebert, the referee, came out to explain his thinking and said, yes, there was a touch, but it wasn't enough for all this falling. And I earlier hadn't given a penalty against Dortmund when Emre Can might have committed a foul. So I'm not going to change my way of refereeing. And I think Terzic, who usually gets not emotional in that sense, he gets emotional when
in the Mourinho sense.
More when he connects with a crowd, or you know, he gets quite
passionate
and touchy feely. Mm. But got very angry because I think it was the kind of result, the kind of performance that yet again has us questioning where Dortmund are going this season.
To the observer, that seems like a good result for Dortmund.
The result was okay, but you know, Dortmund, they're in a fight for top four, and you have tremendous consistency from Leverkusen. Mm. Bayern are definitely going to be in the top four. Mm. Stuttgart, who had another win this week against Bremen with a fantastic striking duo, Undaf and Guirassy, they look like they're going to be top four. So it's now between Dortmund and Leipzig for that last place.
Who do Dortmund face next weekend, Rafa? It's Leipzig on Saturday.
Yeah, and they've got a really difficult cup game in Stuttgart as well on Wednesday.
Have they?
And that game, I think, is going to have a big impact on how the end of the season will go, because this is the most realistic chance of silverware, obviously, for Dortmund. Mm. Bayern already out, Leipzig already out of the cup. So it's between them and Leverkusen as big favourites.
And Stuttgart.
If they get through this game, then they will be joint favourites with Leverkusen. And then their season will still have a big meaning. Of course, they've qualified in the Champions League, so that keep them going. But they know it's unlikely to win that. And because they're already out of the running for the title, effectively, domestically, I think the pressure is beginning to build. And that's why we saw such an outbreak of emotion, of anger from Terzic.
Raf, you said that the referee came out. Like, what was the process for that? Did he just Sky Deutschland just go, oh, look, we've got the referee? Or did he?
So it happens quite frequently. So referees, they can decide when they walk through the mix zone if they want to stop or not. And quite often when they feel that it was controversial or they want to explain themselves, they do. And it's kind of part of the
culture.
Part of the culture, yeah. And I think it's a good thing. It humanizes them. I think it gives a bit of an insight. And it tends to, I think, calm things down and move on the discussion.
Very good. Dortmund currently lying 10 points off the top of the table, just a point outside the top four. Leipzig, the team immediately above them, and that's who they'll be facing at the Signal Iduna Park next Saturday. Leipzig, who gone fourth with that draw for Dortmund, with a 2-1 win over Heidenheim. Oh, and also Bayern not playing because their clash with Union Berlin got postponed because of heavy, heavy snowfall.
Heavy snowfall.
How heavy, Rav?
Super heavy. Do you want me to repeat my line from my column that you've read?
No. I haven't. No,
you haven't read it.
where can I read that?
In The Athletic.
Yeah?
Yeah.
What was the line?
Rafa writes, do you want to read this for Schley?
You read it.
The game in Munich, dot, 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 was actually called off after a freaky deluge of snow, the likes of which haven't been seen in the Bavarian capital since its late 70s heyday as Europe's capital of disco. Was there a lot of bad weather in the 70s? Yes. Not sure I understand that.
But then in Augsburg they played.
If you're not on the YouTube version of this podcast, listener, I urge you to go there now just to see the grin.
I'm just happy when you read out my material because you make it sound even nicer.
Oh, thanks, Raf. Anyway, Bayern couldn't play this weekend, but a game that did take place in the Bundesliga 2 was the Hamburg derby. Rafa.
Sorry, because before, Augsburg played. So how come Augsburg and Bayern and Munich are close to each other, right? So there was not enough snow in Augsburg, but there was enough, there's too much in...
Okay. Yeah, I think Augsburg had the extra day, it was on Sunday, yeah, I think. So true, and it all came down on Saturday morning.
Oh, yeah.
Half a meter of snow.
Yeah. I mean,
that is crazy. The airport closed down. Yeah. All the trains stopped working.
Right.
The subway stopped working. And this is a place where they usually deal with this kind of stuff. And things.
It's not England or anything.
It's not England. But it was overwhelming.
Overwhelming.
Even Nagelsmann had to drive to the draw.
Yeah.
He could not fly.
Did he?
800 kilometres.
800 kilometres?
Long drive, that.
Wow. That was like Barcelona against Inter in the...
Yeah.
And usually Nagelsmann skateboards in his commutes, doesn't he?
Yeah. It was
so...
A bit too far.
He could have snowboarded.
Yeah.
But yeah, the Hamburg derby.
Hamburg derby, James. I mean, the derby will go down, unfortunately, for Daniel Hoyer Fernandez for this incredible on goal that he scored.
Why, Rafa? How incredible was it?
So Hamburg are passing it around in their own box, which they often do, because that's Walter Ball.
Walter Ball.
Tim Walter. Because
I'd seen this on social media and it was captured like worst own goal. And when the defender passes it back across his own goal, you think, oh, this is it. But it's not.
I mean, the pass back is already bad in itself.
Yeah.
Then it takes a horrible bubble.
Because that would happen.
The pitch is cut up.
Yeah.
So it comes up.
Yeah.
And the goalkeeper, under pressure because the pass pick is so poor, whacks it.
He runs up as if to clear it, but clears it into his own net.
Yeah.
Deutlich weniger bislang. Und Achtung, Achtung, Tor! Tor! Was war das denn für ein krummes Ding? Mein Gott, was für ein krummes Ding war das denn?
Raf, if this happened in Italy, what would you be saying?
I would say, oh, Donnarumma's at it again.
Touché.
Such a bad move.
So that was Daniel Hoyer Fernandez.
Yeah, Hoyer Fernandez. But to his and Hamburg's credit, they came back from being 2-0 down, courtesy of that own goal and another one that they conceded, and fought back to a 2-2 draw. And the away fans, because it was at San Paoli, were really celebrating Hoyer Fernandez and make him feel good. And he came up afterwards and gave a really good sort of calm and cool interview saying, yeah, you know, these things happen. Didn't faze me. Yes, they were making fun of me. They're having a good time. It's amusing for them. But for me, I don't care. Didn't even hear it. And came out with a bit of credit.
Yeah, nice.
Raf, sorry, I've just brought up the Bundesliga's Vi table. Up. So Schalke have won 3 of their last 5 games, and yet they are 16th out of 18 teams. What the hell is going on?
Horror start for Schalke. Already fired the manager. It's a bad. And Hamburg are doing that Hamburg thing where you think every year they're going up, but yet they haven't managed yet. It's a strong Bundesliga 2.
Who's top?
St. Pauli. Oh, but Hertha, who Raf wrote about last week, as I'm sure you followed, James, is it? Avid athletic reader. Hertha at 8th. Not great.
Yeah. Anything else you want to
talk about? Well, the one thing I want to ask is, why don't you tell us about Ilari Blasi's...
Ilari
Totti's, what shocked him the most is that one day she was at the Notting Hill Carnival, wasn't she?
But she was here this weekend at a restaurant I go to.
His dream is to meet her.
What restaurant, James?
There's a restaurant in Parsons Green, actually, which is Pugliese.
Okay. And is it called Pugliese?
No, it's called the Gola.
Okay.
The owner's a great guy called Aaron. But so she was there this weekend So yeah, I feel like I've again missed another scoop. I would love to do the interview or the press junket of this documentary because it is phenomenal. I don't know, it just like hits all of my spots. Just like Rome, Totti, reality TV, trash.
Cannot believe it.
Because like Hillary is, I suppose, like the Davina McCall, if you like, of Italian TV, maybe on another level in that she did X Factor, well, she did Big Brother mainly. Mm. And obviously fulfills the kind of Victoria Beckham role. Mm. But she, this is just, it's just like a, it's an hour long like diss track, I suppose, of Francesco Totti.
Nice.
And never go for coffee with someone, James. That's one of the morals.
Oh my God.
Never do that.
Why? What might happen?
Because Francesco will read a lot into it.
Mm.
So don't do that. And the other thing is, and I feel this
if
is
if you're married to Francesco Totti, don't go for coffee.
Don't go for coffee.
Yeah,
that would be
yeah, okay. And then the best part, and I really appreciated this because you've lived in Rome, James. You know how big a deal like sort of Roman taxi drivers are. Yeah, just tell you everything. They know everything.
Mm.
And there's like a narrative device, I suppose, that they use where she's in the back of a Roman cab.
Nice.
And the cabbie is like, you know, we all knew, you know, that what was going on.
Mm.
Because we all know that Francesco Totti loves maritozzi, which is the sweets, sweet cakes that you get in Rome. And then there's this great dramatic pause where he goes, we all know he loves maritozzi and women.
Head on.
Wow. I want to know, did he get his watches back? That's what I really care about.
So halfway through the documentary, it was losing me a little bit.
Can you call
this
a documentary?
No, okay, not a documentary. It's warts and all kind of one-sided, as I said, diss track, essentially.
Diss track, okay.
But like she comes back to the Totti house one day, and as you mentioned, Totti claims that she'd gone to the bank and cleared out a safe deposit box with a collection of Rolexes.
Mm.
But there are all these scenes towards the end of the documentary of her being in the house, and all of a sudden all these belongings of hers have gone missing.
Mm.
And she doesn't know what's happened to them. Is Totti like holding them as a like tit for tat kind of thing going
sad,
on?
Isn't it?
But she then one night she finds them hidden in a kind of loft. She alleges like found all these like bags and then put them in like a recess within the Totti villa.
Sounds like she's just figured out where she put them. Oh, that'll be Francesco Totti.
Anyway, I mean, there's been quite a lot of blowback for Hillary.
Has he responded?
No, but I mean, there's another great bit where she catches him.
Really?
Not in the act, Jules.
Okay.
But she catches him going out with new Mrs. Totti.
With the cameras rolling?
Well, no. So there's some phone footage, and they then kind of reenact her and her best friend. They get in the car and they drive on a night in Rome to where basically they busted
Totti. Reconstruction.
Yeah. And you can see there's like obviously it's, you know, it's
but what he can
tragedy,
go out with his new partner, no?
Yeah, everybody knows that.
No, but this was when they were still together.
Okay.
So when I said about the coffee, he basically read some texts on Hillary's phone.
Yes.
Which he thought she was having an affair because she'd organized this coffee
anyway
with her style. Well, there you go.
Yeah.
Okay. So he assumes that she's having an affair, which she claims she isn't. He changes and then starts seeing this girl, Noemi, who...
No, I don't think I do.
Who is then photographed at the Stadio Olimpico, not with him, but kind of in the same VIP area. But anyway, there's an exhilaration and also obviously quite a lot of upset at, like, you know, sort of busting him.
Right. Exhilaration.
So has he responded or not? Yeah. Has he responded or not yet?
New partner has.
Okay.
Yeah. Which is, I can't remember what she said. It was one of those cryptic Instagram posts, which everyone sort of thought, okay, that's directed at Hillary. But I would recommend watching it also because she pulls out the...
don't need to know.
But James, she pulls out the Unica, Sei Unica t-shirt.
Ah, yeah, yeah.
Hmm. And there's quite a sad moment where she's like, you know, this was meant for me. Obviously, it's not anymore.
The whole thing is sad, you know?
Yeah, well, it is, James.
It is sad. Anyway. Oh, well. It's
on Netflix. Go and watch
Netflix.
It.
Don't waste. He said everything that you had to, you need to know. You don't need to
it's
go
like
watch
I watch
it,
it already.
Oh, yeah, exactly. I
mean, right. Don't need to watch that. Brilliant. Don't need to read Rafa's article. Brilliant. It's been a very productive morning. Excellent, listener. Thank you so much for being with us. If you're still there, we'll be back next Monday because it's Champions League, the final group.
Yeah.
Group stage week ever.
PSG in the Europa League.
Imploding. Manchester United imploding as well.
Donnarumma will be available for that game.
Unfortunately, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Big, big, big week.
Away at Dortmund. Away at
Bobby
Dortmund.
Bacala.
Bobby Bacala. Bacalao involved, certainly.
Yeah.
And still a lot to play for, to finish top or second in the group, all to right. go to the Europa League. So, yeah.
Well, we'll talk more about this next week and about all the exciting things that we mentioned will be happening over the weekend. Brilliant. Jules, many thanks for now. Thank Rafa, you. Alvaro, James, Charlie and Rachel in the booth. And again, you listener, from all of us here, it's goodbye.
You've been listening to The Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Discover bonus video content by searching for The Totally Football Show on YouTube and see the very latest subscription offers at theathletic.com/totally.
The Athletic.